My father once said, politics is the best show in America.
The Democrats are the middle of the road party. The Republicans are the straddle of the road party. So I hereby nominate Mr. Henry Ford for president and christen the party the All Over the Road Party.
Politics is one thing all of us can do something about. At least we can talk about it, and we've been talking about it ever since this republic was born.
I am fighting as I always have fought, for the rights of the little man as well as the big man, for the weak as well as the strong, for those who are helpless as well as those who can help themselves.
A political philosophy called the New Deal was born in the dark days of depression. It raised heated controversies over basic issues of government. Alabama Senator Hugo L. Black, now a justice of the Supreme Court, recalled conditions in pre-Roosevelt days.
The American people have not forgotten, and the American people will not forget in November 1936.
Just as sure as you live, the people of this country in November 1936, by the most overwhelming vote that has ever been cast in American history, is going to march to the polls and enthusiastically send Franklin D. Roosevelt right back to the White House.
Senator Black was answered by Merwin K. Hart, then president of the New York State Economic Council.
Since 1933, the Roosevelt administration has thrown overboard the Democratic platform and adopted a socialist communistic program under the name of the New Deal. The administration passed from the theory that the people are masters and the state the servant to the theory that the state is the master and the people are merely the subjects. This, of course, is nothing but the same old European and Asiatic tyranny from which our ancestors fled to America in order to establish real freedom. The fact is unquestioned that real recovery in the United States dates from this overthrow of the NRA. Since that time, the courage of the business people has constantly increased, for there are growing indications that the man in the street, the average voter, is fed up with the New Deal. There is rising conviction that many other of the alphabetical agencies are going to be thrown out by the Supreme Court. And business folk are willing at last to venture forth, for they are confident that the alien monster that is the New Deal is headed for destruction at the hands of free American citizens.
Destined to become one of the most influential and popular figures in the Democratic Party and eventually attain the vice presidency, Senator Alvin Barkley of Kentucky.
I challenge those who complain that we have robbed the people of their liberty to point to a single example not based on public welfare. I challenge those who weep over the destruction of the state and the demise of the Constitution to indicate where we have stabbed it and where it is buried. We have not destroyed the Constitution. We are not destroying the Constitution. But if the time ever comes when it shall be preserved only by assigning it to a shelf in some museum, where it may be looked at but never used, then the people themselves will destroy it and make another in its place.
On the platform with Senator Barkley was former Secretary of the Treasury Ogden Mills.
There are those who hold that our economic system is fundamentally defective, that its innate weaknesses cause the depression, and that it has neither the vitality nor the adaptability to generate recovery from within. They would supplant it with another system under which an all-powerful central government is to regulate and direct all phases of our economic life down to the smallest detail. Recovery is not to come from within. It is to be imposed from without.
We had plenty of debatable issues on the domestic scene in those days. But meanwhile, some 3,000 miles away, war had broken out in Europe.
America hates war. America America hopes for peace. Therefore, America actively engages in the search for peace.
To most people, the ocean seemed mighty wide, and the battles were far away. Some folks were more troubled about the possible threats of the New Deal to our traditional American freedoms. A staunch defender of the administration was its Secretary of the Interior, Harold Ickes, who matched wits with former NRA Administrator General Hugh Johnson.
General Johnson thinks that I am eccentric in my political and social theories, and I am positive that he is. Thus far, we are in agreement. I am fond of old iron pants. I fancy the vigor of his expressions and relish the savor of his phrases. I like him particularly because, although he's a hard fighter, always charging bravely, although sometimes simultaneously in all directions, he is a fair one. He does not hit below the belt. He can be, I am attitude, even if he is cockeyed as to many of his ideas. The dictatorship that General Johnson bemoans consists of policies and actions of a government that is personally distasteful to him, although in both expression and exercise, such actions come well within our constitutional powers. He is also strong for efficiency, and he delights in knowledge of and comradeship with competent people. It would appear that General Johnson may not be willing to adjourn politics during a time of national crisis, but he boldly advocates that we adjourn democracy. I should like to conclude with these words of Jefferson. Our difficulties are indeed great, if we consider ourselves alone. But when viewed in comparison with those of Europe, they are the joys of paradise.
Rising to Secretary Ickes' challenge came blustery Hugh Johnson.
Ladies and gentlemen, and my dear Mr. Secretary. To defend a thing, we must know what it is and what threatens it. What is democracy? I fear that Harold thinks democracy is anything Tommy Corcoran says it is. How is our system threatened? Well, in the first place, democracy depends absolutely on the consent of the governed. The Declaration of Independence said that governments are justified only to secure to the people life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, and that when they fail in that, they are through. There are more ways than one to lose liberty and happiness. Massive public debts, unbearable taxes, unemployment of millions, inability of farmers and businessmen to make decent living do of themselves destroy both liberty and happiness. These conditions come from unconscionable extravagance and callous carelessness in laying merciless tax burdens. Debt and taxes interfere with human enterprise, employment, and prosperity, and that certainly reduces both liberty and happiness. I shall not take time to answer Mr. Ickes. I submit that he didn't say anything. I think one of the greatest dangers to democracy of all, short of war itself, is the granting of temporary, extraordinary powers inconsistent with democracy to permanent bureaus of government. For you can write it in your book that if enough of these powers are granted to permanent departments of government, we may have Mr. Roosevelt and my gracious opponent in office from now on till death do us part.
Then the old curmudgeon and General Johnson gathered around the mic for audience questions.
Secretary Ickes, has the president the right to choose his advisors from among businessmen as he has from among left-wing liberals who were never elected to office either?
I don't like a question that states a case. I'll answer any frank and honest question, but not a loaded one.
Does the general honestly believe that the present administration is responsible for the number of unemployed?
General honestly believe that the present administration is responsible for the large number of unemployed.
Certainly not.
Secretary Issues, will not our national unity be augmented by a statement from our president that for a third term he will not choose to run?
I'm not discussing politics tonight.
Now, that's on the third person.
General Johnson, don't you think it's better for those among us who work to pay a little bit out of our salaries for those people who are not working and to keep them off the breadline to help the morale of the country? The
question is, don't I think it's better for people to pay a little bit out of their salaries if they have them to help people who are on the breadline? Of course it is. But I'll say to you, there's a limit beyond which you can't go in doing that. You can possibly carry two-thirds of another person. Maybe you can carry another person. But you can't carry three other persons because you'll have a hump and your back look like a hairpin.
Don't you think you can be better defending democracy by upholding President Roosevelt, who was elected by the great majority of the American people?
I don't regard the Fourth New Deal as democracy. I think they're two very separate things. Therefore, if I should attack the Fourth New Deal, it's a sense that in my heart, I'm not attacking democracy. So far as President Roosevelt is concerned, it has been my policy and my practice ever since he started to run for office to defend him when I thought he was right, and I'll submit that nobody ever defended him any better. And to criticize him when I said he's wrong, and in my present position, I'll continue to do that until they put me in Alcatraz.
Secretary devoted his entire speech to the administration of emergency powers in wartime. Are we to infer that the administration definitely anticipates war?
No. But I might take an umbrella to my office without anticipating that it rained.
Nevertheless, rain was on the horizon. It was 1939, and the shadows of war were lengthening in Europe. Throughout America, business was in a slump, and unemployment was growing. The struggle between the New Deal and private enterprise continued with ever-increasing bitterness. Senator Robert Taft of Ohio.
I should say that 4/5 of the businessmen, large and small, are against the present administration. It is hard to work together. It is hard to work together with someone who is unfriendly to you, and the truth is that the present administration, however it may talk of breathing spells and business appeasement, is not in the last analysis friendly to the growth and development of private enterprise. There are a great many individuals in the government in Washington who are entirely opposed to the profit system. Government is certainly not friendly to business when it goes into business itself, as in the TVA and many other enterprises in competition with existing businesses. For it is absolutely impossible for any individual business to compete successfully with the government. I would say that if business and government are to work together, the government must change the basic principles of its present policies, or the people must change the government.
In reply, Jerome Frank, chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission.
Before proceeding, let me say that when I accepted the invitation to speak here tonight, I did not realize that I was to be on the program with an avowed and distinguished candidate for a presidential nomination. And one who has already begun his campaign for office, as you may have observed this evening. I am a member of a non-political commission required by The commission is required by law to consist of not more than 3 members of the same political party, and 2 of my colleagues are Republicans. They are not New Dealers. If we work together, it is because we are reasonable men and find it possible to do so. I shall confine myself to what I have from the first understood, and I thought that Senator Taft had understood, to be the question of the evening. Not the policies or wisdom of legislation, But the question, can government administrators and businessmen work together? Our aim is and must be this, a secure profit system under a secure democracy. And cooperation between government and business can achieve and is achieving that result, an indispensable result, if America is to avert the alternative disaster of chaos or tyranny.
In another debate, Assistant Attorney General Robert H. Jackson stated the case for the government's role in supplying the needs of the people.
Business should get over thinking about men in public life as being different from themselves. There are dumb plays in government, matched by some in business. In fact, I don't know which brand of wisdom I distrust the most. That of the theorists who have studied a business but never run one, or that of the executives who have run a business but never studied it. Private enterprise in America today is in a situation where chiefly its own workers are its customers, and its customers are its own workers. Unless it can keep the circle of goods and wages moving, then the government, directly and brazenly, must fill the gap in employment on one hand and the needs for goods on the other.
Following Mr. Jackson to the microphone came a big man with an unruly shock of hair and a robust voice. Do you remember?
For several years now, we have been listening to a bedtime story. Telling us that the men who hold office in Washington are by their very position endowed with a special virtue, that they are men of far vision, of exceptional ability and capacity. Businessmen, on the other hand, particularly so-called big businessmen, are pictured as the ruthless dictators of sprawling industrial empires with no real ability except the talent for collecting money for themselves. The main problem is to restore confidence of investors in American business. And to do this will require more than pleasant speaking on the part of the government. For several years, the government has taken definite action to show its hostility to business. It must now take definite action to demonstrate the sincerity of its desire to cooperate. At this critical point in our nation's history, it should seem fitting that business and government should bear in mind the warning which Abraham Lincoln gave to the two factions into which this country was dividing at the time of his first inaugural address. I am loath to close. We are not enemies, but friends. We must not be enemies, I think.
Yes, those were stormy years in American politics, and Wendell Willkie was to play a leading part in the limelight of public opinion.
I accept the nomination of the Republican Party for President of the United States. I accept it in the spirit in which it was given at our convention at Philadelphia. The spirit of dedication. I herewith dedicate myself with all my heart, with all my mind, and with all my soul to make this nation strong. I propose that during the next 2.5 months, the President and I appear on public platforms together in various parts of the country.
The election year, 1940, saw France fall to Nazi Germany. The Battle of Britain was joined. America started building new ships and planes. And President Roosevelt hit the campaign trail for a third time.
I still remember. He is one of that great historic trio which has voted consistently against every measure for the relief of agriculture, Martin, Barton, and Fish.
The voters returned FDR to office by a margin of 5 million votes.